All right, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Benim and Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Lo yilamed Adam Ravak Sofrim. That an individual who is single, Tosafot over here says a Ravak is someone who's Adam Panoi, Shelo Nasa Isha Meolam. This means that someone who's never been married at all. Rashi, on the other hand, says that Panoi below Isha, he doesn't have that added qualification of the Olam, although later on in the Mishnah, with Rabbi Lezer's opinion, it seems that Rashi is implying the same thing. There are those that say that it just means someone who is single. Obviously, that will have implications on the remainder of the Mishnah. In terms of Sofrim, Rashi over here says, Melamdei Tinokot, Klomar Lo Yargil. Person should not be a person who normally or regularly teaches young children if he is single, if he is not married. On the other hand, the Rambam and others seem to indicate the person should not engage in this activity whatsoever. Rashi says you shouldn't make this into your profession, you shouldn't do this on a regular basis, whereas the Rambam seems to indicate you shouldn't be involved whatsoever in this. The Gemara will discuss why that is. V'lo talamed isha sofrim. A woman should not teach the young children, and again we'll see why. Rabbi Elazar omer, af mish ein lo isha, lo yilamed sofrim. So Belazer says, not only is someone who's a ravak, a bachelor, but someone who does not have a wife, and the Gemara will see even a more extreme version of this, but Rabbi Elazar seems to indicate that even had he been married, but now he's divorced, or he's a widow, that he should also not be teaching the young children. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yireh vavak behema. Yehuda says, a bachelor, or whatever the definition we gave a ravak before, should not be a shepherd, should not work with animals. And the two single men should not sleep together in a single bed. The other version is not talit or kila, which would be or a bed or canopy. And the chachamim say it's no problem. And we already saw that in yesterday's daf, that the chachamim say we don't worry about that, and the Gemara will bring that brayta. So Gemara wants to know, my time, what's the reason here that these singles should not be teaching the young children? If you think it's a problem of pedophilia, which would be that these individuals teaching young children would be a problem because here they're single and they're involved with the young children. Vatanya, Amru lo le Rabbi Yehuda, we have a bright dog, and they say to Rabbi Yehuda, I mean the Chachamim here who are Matir, lo nechshedu Yisrael ha-mishkav zachur, v'lo al behema. That we're not suspecting people of homosexuality or bestiality. Those two things are not on the radar screen, and therefore we don't take preventative measures with regards to these. So if that's the case, the single male teacher teaching the young children, we don't worry about the issue of Mishkav Zachor, and that would not be something that, quote-unquote, is a temptation for this individual. Ela, Ravak, Mishum Amhata, Diyanoke. The reason that he should not be a single teacher is because of the mother's of the children, as Rashi notes over here, that the mothers bring the children to school, they drop them off in school, and therefore he's going to be exposed to the mothers on a regular basis. If you remember, the Gemara in Sota, on Daf Chav Aleph, speaks about the Zchut of Torah that the women have. And over there, one of the items was that the women teach their children Torah. Rashi over there says they don't literally teach them, but rather they take them to the school and they pick them up from the school. So if the women are the ones dropping off and picking up from the school, then there's a risk that this single teacher that's there will either have yichud with the women who are dropping off their children at the school, or, as the Rambam seems to indicate, that it'll be megare the yetzer, it'll build up the yetzer inside of him. And so this is an exposure that we don't want for a single man, which is to be exposed to so many young women, because of the risks that are involved in that, both for himself as well as for the both of them together. Isha mishumavata de inoke. And the same is true of the single woman that's teaching, for the fathers that drop off their children at school. Because again, there's going to be this possibility of yichud or exposure between a single woman and men. So you have these issues either of yichud, of yetzer, that are going to come about. First of all, the Tosafot Ari HaZaken, based on this Gemara says, it qualifies this, he says, Miu koze betinokot. This is all with young children. Aval bigdolot lo shayachacha. But if they're older children, it's not an issue. Lo amahata v'lo ba'ata. Doesn't matter for the women or the men. Umutar, and it's totally fine. If the whole risk here is the exposure to the parents, then if you have children who are old enough to bring themselves or walk themselves to school, and you won't have the parents entering into the fray, then we do not worry about a woman teaching the younger children or the man teaching the younger children. So first of all, again, it seems here that the Gemara has no issue with pedophilia at all. That's not the risk that they're worried about. Number two is, it seems that the woman should not teach the young boys because of the men, but if the boys are slightly older, we do not worry about that circumstance. With regards to a single male teacher teaching, the Mishnah only indicates that they can teach young boys. There's no indication about young girls. Now, that could be for one of two reasons. Either it's problematic, or, in all likelihood, culturally, sociologically, the young girls didn't go to school. Wouldn't be even addressed in a Mishnah like this. But it is a possibility that you could argue that a young single man should not be teaching girls who are already old enough that they don't need their parents, but they are old enough, I guess, to be of marriageable age. Maybe there is a risk there, but the Mishnah does not address it at all. It's clear the Mishnah is referring to young boys for two reasons. One is the Mishkav Zachar, which is that the Gemara suspects at first that there's a problem of homosexuality, and that's the risk that they are addressing. And number two is, in the Gemara, when it brings down, it says, Mishum Amhata Diyanoke. Again, there it seems like they're talking about male and not female children. But again, sociologically, they wouldn't have had young girls at school at that time or at the cheder anyway. And so it's not clear that the Mishnah is making a statement about it. It's just not addressing it at all. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Af Mishain Lo Isha. Ibailu, Mishain Lo Isha Klal. Does that mean that someone doesn't have a wife at all now? I mean, he's divorced or he's widowed. Odilma Mishaina Shruya Itzlo. Or does it mean that he has a wife? It's just that she is not present. He went to a different city to teach. He left his wife behind. His wife is away. Tashma. Af Mishayishlo. Veina Shruya Itzlo. Lo Yilamed Sofrim. So we have a bright dot that indicates that even if he has a wife, but she is not present, she's not here, Lo Yilamed Sofrim, he shouldn't teach children. This obviously would be attributed to Rabbi Elazar, because he's the one of that opinion that Ein Lo Isha, which is the language that he uses. The Chiddush here in Rabbi Elazar is that even in a scenario where he is married, but his wife is not present, we worry about this issue of the Yetzer or the problems of Yichud. His wife being present doesn't mean she has to be at school with him. It means that she's not available to him, so that he has some sort of desires that build up and his wife is not there. Right, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo Yireh, this idea of not being a shepherd or not having two men sleep together. Tanya, we have a Braita, which is what we just quoted before, and we quoted yesterday. Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda, lo nechshedu Yisrael, lo mishkav zachor velo al beima. The reason the Chamim are matirim is because this is not something that we even consider. This is not the type of Yetzer that we worry about in terms of homosexuality or bestiality. Right now, the next Mishnah, which is really a segue from the previous Mishnah, but has nothing to do with our Masechta, which is that once the Mishnah previously dealt with professions, now the Mishnah takes on this issue of professions and discusses it in more detail. The first part of the Mishnah discusses it in the context of Yichud. The remainder of the Mishnah just talks about professions in general. Kol she'asakav im anashim, any profession which involves women. Now, whether that means that the profession itself is quote-unquote, a women's profession, or it's a profession that causes the individual to have to interact with women on a regular basis. He may not have yichud with women. So obviously that's very strange, because yichud has nothing to do with profession, right? Pshita. So Rashi, of course, implicitly answers the question, and he says, afilu im harbe nashim, even with multiple women, which is Rashi the Shita. Though I've mentioned this before, the Rashi believes that with regards to lo yitiached adam im shtei nashim, a man may not be secluded with two women, that is limited to two women. But once you get on beyond two women, there's no din of yichud. Meaning for Rashi, multiple women will solve your problem of yichud. So what the Mishnah is being mechadish over here is that even with multiple women, lo yitiached im nashim, if he is a professional that deals with women, he should not have yichud with three, four, five women, even though technically that's not yichud for anyone else. The reason being, as Rashi says, because libo gaspahu, he has a strong relationship with them, a comfort with them, and they will all cover up for him because they have a relationship, they like him. So he has an additional problem where the normal inhibition that exists when you have multiple women there together with the single man, that doesn't exist over here. And that's the way the Rashi explains, lo yit yachedim enashim. If you look at Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot, the Rambam says that it's not a heter. Meaning that someone might think that because they are a professional, it's mutar for them in their profession to have ichud. So what the Mishnah is coming to tell you is that profession is not an excuse for yichud. You still have to keep the dinim of yichud, even if you are a professional that needs, quote-unquote, to have yichud. That's not allowed. And that doesn't give you permissibility. So again, if you have a doctor, if you have someone that, quote-unquote, has to be isolated with women because of the privacy issues, it has to be done in a manner that someone else can walk into the room, that there are ways to protect against yichud, and that there is no permissibility of yichud in these instances. It's a balance between maintaining the individual's privacy, but it not being yichud. Today, it's taken on added meaning because of the many lawsuits that arise in these situations. So even as a professional, forgetting about yichud, there's a value in having the other witness or someone else there so that there are no accusations that come up. Many offices where you have to have private conversations, people put up a glass wall. So there, the privacy is maintained, but everything is visible, so that's equivalent of petach petuach l'shut rabim, and there's no problem of yichud in that case. So you have to use methodologies that can overcome the issues of yichud, but don't compromise the privacy of the individuals. Others explain lo yitiachedim enashim is that by a professional, because of the nature of their profession, there is a higher likelihood of yichud with nashim. And therefore, even, this is what Rabbeinu Tam says over here, even if ishto imo, even if the normal heter where his wife is with him, which is protective, over here we would not allow it. So that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, the chiddush of the Mishnah is, that you do not have the dispensation of ishto imo that applies normally, over here would not apply with regards to a professional, because there's a greater risk when it comes to a professional that ishto imo may not prevent or may not create the proper inhibitions for this individual. A person should not train his child or give him a profession that involves working with women. Meaning that if you're going to train your child for a profession, don't train them in a profession that will land them in these compromising situations or in these difficult situations, because there are large risks in working with women. Rabbi Meir Omer, Lo'olam yilamed adam et bno umanut nikia vikala. There's some questions in the Marsha talks about this, whether nikia vikala are actually found in the girsa, because later on the Gemara is going to bring a memra which seems to indicate that the word kala wasn't in the Mishnah. But nevertheless, our Mishnah has it printed here, which is that a person should always choose a profession that is nikia. Nikia would be naki mi gezel, naki mi chait, things that are involved in a person having integrity and being able to act properly. Vikala means, like we would explain it, easy profession, meaning not something that's heavy duty or very hard work. V'itpalel l'misha osher v'nichasim shalom. And then he'll daven to the one who all the wealth and possessions belong to, meaning to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Shein umanut, shein ba'aniyut v'ashirut. There is no profession where there are people that are successful and there are people who are less successful or not successful. The profession does not determine the success of the individual. It all has to do with the merits of the individual. So it doesn't matter the profession. You would think, oh, I'm going to do a heavy-duty profession because you can earn more money. But doing that, in the modern parlance, that would be, I'd have to be a doctor or a lawyer, otherwise I'm not going to make a lot of money. What the Mishnah says is that's not relevant. The profession itself is not relevant. Many people are billionaires from things that you would never imagine. So Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one who gives the mizone, gives one parnasa, and it's not necessarily correlated with the profession that the individual picks. Here it says lefi zchuto. Tosafot l'shitatam says zchuto can't literally mean zchuto, but rather perish lefi mazalo. It has to do with your mazal. Because the Gemara tells us that b'nei chaye mizone lo bezchut tataya, they have nothing to do with your merits. It has to do with your mazel. So the zchuto doesn't literally mean zchut, but rather mazel. The Marsha rejects that explanation and says, the Mishnah just told you, you're supposed to daven. So if it's all about mazel, why is the Mishnah telling you to daven? So he says that no, zchuto literally means by your merits. And he invokes the Tosafot in the Gemara in Shabbat, where Tosafot is trying to reconcile between the statement that we just quoted in the Tosafot, that all this has to do with mazel, versus the Gemara that seems to indicate that it has to do with the ability, the zechut of an individual. And he says there that bezechut gadol, or a tefillah gadola, maybe you can overcome the mazel. Meaning that there's a certain default that comes with the mazel. You can break that track, but it takes a lot to break the track. It's not just going to happen willy-nilly. You're going to have to daven very hard. You're going to have a great zechut in order to overcome it. And that's what the Mishnah is saying. It's fizechuto. You can't change the path or your destiny. Again, nothing to do with your umanut, because mazel will determine. Plus, zechuyot, if you daven very hard, if you have a great zechut, it might change what that mazel is as well. Shem Elazar Omer, Ra'ita miyamecha chaya ba'of sheish lehem umanut. When was the last time you saw one of these wild animals, birds, that has a profession? Ve'ein mit parnasim shelo b'tzar. And they manage to get a living together to eat and be fine. Obviously, this isn't perfect because the animals do have difficulties sometimes, and it's not always an easy life. But balo lo nivru elisham sheni. Those animals were only created to service me. Vani nivreti l'shameshet koni, and I was created to service my master. Enu din shet parnes shelo b'tzar. Certainly, I should be able to get my pranosa without difficulty, because if those that are servicing me, God provides all that they need, then certainly I, who am directly servicing God, should be entitled to parnosa meit Hashem without tzar. So then why do I need a profession? Why do I need all this? Ela shurati masai. I didn't act appropriately, meaning that my sins have caused the problem. Kipachti et parnasati, and therefore that took away or reduced my ability to get parnasa. The Mishnah here is probably invoking that which we say on Rosh Chodesh, but the Barchi Nafshi. In the Barchi Nafshi, it speaks about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides sustenance for all the animals and all of nature, that Hashem takes care of them. And then they sing a shira back to Hashem for the fact that Hashem provides to them. So the Mishnah is probably picking up on that, playing on that and saying that we as human beings should have been no different than those animals. Because we should do the same thing. I mean that we should be singing shira to Hashem, and Hashem would be providing us parnasa. What plays interference and causes static in this, what would be the normal relationship, is the fact that we sin. Our being human beings causes that problem. Obviously, there's an other side to parnasa and to human beings being productive, which is that we're also charged, enjoined by the Torah to be creative and to be progressive and do things that are beneficial to the world. So animals are just there to survive. Human beings have to do more than just survive. But that would make a difference in what type of profession you pick versus the need or necessity for parnasa. Meaning that in terms of the pure parnasa aspect of this, this should not be a question in terms of profession. You shouldn't pick your profession for the parnasa. You should be picking your profession for the productive nature and the contribution that you can make to society. And so he's saying that parnosa should not be the factor that plays in over here, because that is something that should have been taken care of, or that's something that's connected to the animals. That's the animal side of us, which is pure sustenance. That has nothing to do with the profession you pick. That simply Hashem provides as long as you behave properly. The aspect of productivity, creativity, that's something that's meaningful in picking a profession. And therefore, one's profession should be reflective of that ideal rather than the simple means of a parnasa. Abba Gurion ish tzadian omer mishum Abba Guria lo yilamed adam et bno. So here's a list of professions you should not teach your child. Chamar, gamal. Here we have kadar. There are other gusot that either had sapar or karar. Sapan, ro'eh, vechenvani. Shouldn't pick any of these. Shumanatam umanot listim. All these professions end up in thievery, in stealing. So we'll go through them. The easy ones are the chenvani and the ro'eh. The chenvani, Rashi talks about how they either cheat on mishkalot, on the weights or the measurements, or they fill their wine with water so that there's ona'ah problems that are involved with the chenvani. Meaning that there's many reasons, or there are many opportunities to cheat the customers. And therefore, a chenvani is a big temptation to be a thief. A ro'eh, a shepherd. This we know from the stories of Avraham and Lot, that shepherds let their animals graze in other people's fields. You can go around locally here and see it all over the place. But the shepherds don't feed their animals from their own feed. They go into other people's fields and let them run around. So that's easy in terms of listim. The other professions over here, Rashi claims that there's an aspect of listiyut and dishonesty involved with them. A chamar, we'll call him a short-haul mover. A gamal is a long-haul mover. A chamar uses the chamor, the donkey, for his moving truck. The gamal uses a gamal for his long haul. The kadar is either someone who makes deirot, which means that they make earthenware utensils, which means that he has to move from place to place. Other possibilities, karar, and that might be what Rashi is saying over here. Rashi says, bal kronot. Karar is someone who is a wagon driver, and a sapan would be a sailor, or someone that's out at sea. So here you're dealing with four individuals. If you change the girsa to karar, then you're dealing with four individuals who all move from place to place, from the short haul all the way to the longest haul, which would be the sailor. And that the problem with these individuals is either that they're moving from place to place, and therefore they get into trouble, or they take things that don't belong to them because they're not fixed in a location. They don't feel any inhibition in taking or any remorse about what they do because they're not going to see these people anymore. They're going to move over and over again. So that's one possibility. Rashi introduces the possibility, which is the same thing as the other professions, which is since they're moving from place to place, when they're going around, they pick up things from here. They take feed and they take stuff from other people's fields and give it to their animals, as well as the fact that they sign contracts that involve conditions of the move, and then they violate those conditions. They don't stand by those conditions, meaning in order to win the business, they promise the world, and then when it comes to actually doing it, they don't follow through with it. So for all those reasons, these are professions that you shouldn't train your child in. Doesn't mean that there aren't honest or people with integrity in these professions. It just means that if you're sending your child here, you're putting him into the face of temptation, which is that there's many options or there are high likelihood for thievery or cheating in these professions. So don't send him down this path. So then we have Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishmo. Rabbi Yehuda says over in the name of Abba Guria, Hachamarin Ruban Rishaim. The Chamarin, who are the short haul movers, they are mostly Rishaim, mostly because of the fact that they are short haul movers. Hagamalin Ruban Kshirim. Those that are doing the long haul, they're mostly Kasher. Hasapanim Ruban Chasidim. And the Sapanim, the sailors, are super duper Chasidim. The reason being, as Rashi notes over here, the difference is the risk and danger that is involved. The short haul mover, the Chamar, doesn't get into a lot of trouble or a lot of danger. Therefore, he has confidence in his profession and in himself. And therefore, he doesn't, he's not machni himself to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He doesn't daven. He doesn't worry about stealing. On the other hand, the Gamalim and Sapanim are doing the longer hauls. The Gamalim go through the deserts. The Sapanim go to sea. So here you have huge risks in terms of their professions. And those risks cause them to daven to Hashem. There's no atheist in the foxhole. So these people, since they're at risk, they both will be more honest and have integrity because they want Hashem's help, but they also will daven. And that's what he says here, that the more risk in the profession, then the more likelihood that these people would turn themselves towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tov Shibarofim LeGeinom, the best of the doctors should go to Geinom. Now over here, Rashi gives a slew of reasons why that is true. First of all, he says, Enu Yarei Min HaKholi. He doesn't worry about getting sick. Meaning that the doctor who looks at everything through the prism of a rationalist and a medical prism says, you know, whatever the sickness is, we can have a cure, we'll find a solution to the problem. And therefore, they're not afraid of the choli. Now, choli and sickness are supposed to be things that bring us the tshuva, that indicate to us that something's wrong. Over here, he's not going to be affected by this because he doesn't think in those terms. As well as the fact, machlo machal briim, he eats healthy items, and therefore he doesn't think he's going to get sick, or he doesn't worry about getting sick. Therefore, he doesn't break his heart to Hashem, meaning that he's not humble or doesn't have humility. And sometimes he kills people. Sometimes he gives the wrong diagnosis. Sometimes he doesn't give the right treatment. He ends up killing people. And sometimes he can provide medical care to someone who can't afford it, but he refuses to provide it because they're not paying him and they can't pay. And therefore this Rofim, Tov Shebarofim, the Geinom, because of the posit of these issues, because of the fact that this individual is not going to act properly. Again, the Tosafot Gezaken says, Shemimitim Achole. Marsha has a nice idea here. He says, Tov Shibrofim the Geinom. The reason it's Tov Shibrofim is this, the guy who has a certain amount of haughtiness and thinks that he is the best doctor. So therefore, he relies on himself. He doesn't ask for second opinions. He doesn't check his work. And therefore, he causes people to die because of that haughtiness or because he thinks he's the Tov Shibrofim. He thinks he's the best of the doctors. And that's why you should go to Geinom. So if you put that together, then a doctor, obviously, that has humility, a doctor who acknowledges that it all comes from Hashem and he's just the shliach of Hashem, then that wouldn't be applicable over here. You should know that probably in their day and in the language of the Mishnah, we're talking about Rofim, there are two types of Rofim before the modern era. One is a charlatan and the other one is a bloodletter. So those are the two individuals we're going to see in the Gemara, what the Gemara thinks of bloodletters. But the Rofim over here is not in the classic sense of Rofim like we think about it today, even though I think it is applicable in the same manner, but it's more along the lines of what they called Rifuah in their day. Right. So it's very interesting. There was a study done recently in terms of doctors who deal in high-risk areas, let's say neurologists or brain surgeons. And what made the difference between a great doctor and a mediocre doctor had to do with what happened when something went wrong. If there was something that went wrong and the patient died or something didn't work out, so what was the reaction of the doctor? So many doctors just said, you know what, they weren't going to make it. There's a percentage of loss. Those are the odds. Those doctors turned out, once they did that once, they continued to have more problematic surgeries and outcomes because of that attitude. The ones who, after something went wrong, would go and sit for hours and hours and hours and try to figure out what went wrong or what they could have done differently, that made a difference that they became even better doctors and they were much more successful and had better success rates afterwards. So there is a connection between those that have a certain amount of humility and blame themselves for the failure in the surgery and therefore they took responsibility for what the outcome was. It made a difference in their future approach. On the other hand, someone who blamed it on the odds or the patients or on the equipment that was there, they ended up having over time, worse and worse outcomes. And the difference between great doctors and poor doctors had to do with that humility. And even the best of the butchers is a partner to Amalek. Rashi over here claims it's because this is similar to what we saw before, that they are individuals who have the ability to cheat or to make decisions that are problematic, which is that they're always facing someone coming to them and saying, is this a treifa? Or they check the animal and they have to determine if it's a treifa or not. It's a monetary issue. There's money involved. And since there's money involved, many times they make the decision that's not the best decision. They make the decision because of the money. And therefore they feed treifot to Klal Yisrael. Now, based on that, what's the connection to Amalek? There are midrashim that connect that to Amalek. I would just say that the juxtaposition in Parshat Ki Tetzeh, the parsha of Amalek, which is at the end of Parshat Ki Tetzeh, the parsha right before that has to do with weights and measurements and not cheating other people. So the same thing over here. The atabach, who is involved in this type of cheating through treifot, would also be shutafo shel Amalek. The Tosafot Ri Hazakein brings down what is the more classic view of what the problem is. The Balei Musar say, ve'it demefarshe sha'umanut blamdo achzariot. That type of profession teaches a person to be more coarse and less caring. A person who's involved in killing and with blood turns out to be someone who is less sensitive to these issues in general. And therefore that causes the problem, or that's why they're called shutafo shel Amalek. Rabbi Nurai Omer, meniach ani kol umanot shebaolam, ve'eni melamed bni ela Torah. I would give up any other profession, and I would only teach my son the one profession that matters, which is Torah. Now, whether this belongs to the Mishnah or not is actually questionable, because this happens to many times at the end of a Masechta, which is at the last Mishnah of the Masechta, which involves a Gadata. Many times there are Braitot that are added on to the end of the Mishnah, as if they are part of the Mishnah. The reason to say that is, when we get to the Gemara, you're going to see that the Gemara repeats almost word for word what's found in the Mishnah without any addition. So why does the Gemara need to bring it if it's not telling you any new information? The answer probably is that those were braitot, and then those braitot got appended to the Mishnah in the Mishnayot. Why would you pick Torash? Adam ochel miskara beolam hazeh, vakeren kayemet beolam haba. So that person gets the reward in this world, and then he has reward also in the world to come. That's what we say every morning after Birkat HaTorah. B'shar kol umanot, other professions, ain't okay. Shadam balidei choli olidei zikna, when a person becomes ill or gets older, olidei yisurin, or they're in a difficult predicament, ven yochol asok b'mlachto, and they no longer can be engaged in their profession. Haru meit v'rav. Then those were the days where there was no safety net, there was no pensions, there was nothing afterwards. If you couldn't work, there was no way to survive. Aval Torah ain't okay. But Torah is not like this. Elam shemarto mikol rabin naruto. It protects him while he is young. And it takes care of him, gives him hope and a salvation when he gets older. When he's young, what does it say about the Torah? Those that are desiring or hoping or grasping towards Hashem, will be given strength over and over again. I mean that even though the Gemara says the story in Baba Metzia with Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, that one who learns Torah, mitasteshet kocho, that it weakens the individual. Nevertheless, here there's a promise that yelichlifu koach, they will be given the strength to continue in their learning, despite the fact that Torah weakens those individual. So those that are kovei Hashem, those that are hoping and looking towards Hashem, they will get strength. Bziknuto ma'omer, what does it say when you get older? Old yinuvun b'seva, when you reach the ages of seva, of being older, then the continuation of the pasuk, as Rashi says, d'sheinim rananim iyu, right, that they will be d'shein and ranan, that they will have those benefits of the being fat and being rested and relaxed, they will enjoy life. Rashi over here explains, afabe the day zikna, or you see, many ochol asokba, even when you can't engage in Torah, huochel mi matan schara. That you can get that benefit even when you're not engaged in Torah. And Rashi in the Braita that's brought in the Gemara says, itzmechu tzemach, that they produce flowering and offspring and offshoots. And then it will focus or push the schar towards the time that you need it, which is when you get older. Now, from the Mishnah itself, it's very interesting because the Mishnah itself seems to indicate that we're talking about here not just schar in the sense of something that is spiritual, but we're talking about schar in real terms. That someone who has a profession when they get older and they can't participate in that profession, that they would lose their ability to make a living. Whereas by Torah, he would be provided with the food and whatever that he needs. What's very interesting here is the Marsha who writes about this Mishnah. The Marsha writes here, Bitzon Lomar, he's a big picture about this whole Mishnah. Bivadai li umanot klal lo yismoch adam al tfilato li itasher. If you don't have a profession, you may as well not bother davening, because nobody gets rich without a profession. So he says you have to have a vehicle for God to provide you a parnasa, because if you simply do nothing and pray, then God has no means by which to give you a parnasa. So he says that bivadai, our Mishnah believes, that you have to have a profession. That's one of the obligations of a father to a child, is that he has to teach him a profession. Veleka man depolig. He says there's not anybody who argues on this point that you must have a profession. Vishaninu gamkein b'avot. We also learn in Mishnah Avot, kol haTorah sheni mamalacha sofa b'teila. Any Torah without a profession, without work, ends up being b'teila. Ela dekamar. She'al yachshov adam, but then what's the Mishnah teaching you then? If you must have a profession, is that a person shouldn't think d'melacha kveida yitparnes, that a person should do a heavy duty profession or a difficult profession because he'll make a lot of money. V'tei melachto keva v'torato arai, and they make his profession the majority of his investment of his life, and his Torah will be just a sidebar. Ella, that's what the Mishnah's meser and the musar of the Mishnah is. Yasok m'lacha nikiya v'kala. He should be involved in a nice, easy profession. Shuchol asot torato keva, so that he can make his Torah the major part of his investment. U'melachto arai. So what the Marsha says is that profession is a necessity, and everybody must have a profession. The question of the Mishnah is, what profession? So the Mishnah is telling you, pick a profession that allows you to spend the majority of your time learning Torah, And don't pick a profession which is going to swallow up all your time, because in the end, they're not the profession that determines their parnasa, it's the schult, it's what a davening to Hashem that determines the parnasa. But then he runs into a problem because of Rabbi Nohrai. Rabbi Nohrai, at the end of the Mishnah, says, I wouldn't teach my child anything except Torah. So how's he going to explain that? He says, Rabbi Nohrai, the kamar nami lekaman, meniach ani kol umanot sheba olam, ela Torah, vadai de lo polik. Says, for sure he doesn't argue on this point. If it's sarech kol adam lomod umanut, and he believes also, everybody has to have a profession. Elohachi kamar, meniach ani akviut shekol umanut, I would give up the kviut in any other profession. I would teach him Torah as the major part of his education and his profession as the smaller part of his profession. So he says that even in Rabbi Nohrai, that's what it means. Others suggest that Rabbi Nohrai is not speaking about the general klal, but rather he says, Bni, my son. His son was an exceptional individual, someone who Torah was something that came to him easy and he was very successful at it. This is my son. I would only teach him Torah because he had a head for it. He had a cup for it. But that's not a general statement for everyone. So those are the two ways to Rabbi Nohrai in the context of the remainder of the Mishnah. But you hear, see the Marshal taking a very strong stand about the fact that everybody has to have a profession in order that a God can bless them. You can't have God blessing you with a parnasa if you don't have parnasa. You have to have a means of parnasa. The question is the balance between that parnasa and one's Torah learning, doing a mitzvot, what the majority of one's time or dedication in their life is towards. Is that towards Torah or is it towards their profession? And the Mishnah brings an example of this by Avram Avinu. Avram Zakein, Vashem Berachet Avram Bakol. That Avram has reached the older age. He's more advanced in his age. Hashem blesses him with everything. Matzinu Shasa Avram Avinu et Kol HaTorah Kula. So now you need a proof to the other side of this. How do you know that the bracha that came to Avram Avinu had to do with the fact that he learned Torah? Because we have evidence in the Torah that Avram kept the Torah. Ad shelo nitna, even before it was given, shneamar, Eikev asher shema Avram bikoli, v'yishmor mishmarti, mitzvotai, chukutai, v'torotai. So we have a pasuk that says that Avram Avinu kept all the commands of God, all the mitzvot, the Torah. And therefore you see here that why was Avram berach after Avram bakol when he was a zakein? Because of all that he did when he was younger. Tana Rabbanan, kol she'asakavim anashim, anybody who is involved with women, meaning that the profession or that whatever he deals with is involved with women, suro ra. So Rashi says, minhago ra'a, that this is someone who, I would say his character is not of a great quality, because kibrito ra lishtadel imo, shehei sari labu balabeto. The reason being is because the women are always going to be pleading with him, asking him for things, wanting to get into his house so they can get a deal. Whatever it is, his interaction with the women is going to be in a manner that is inappropriate because the women need his services or they need what he has. And therefore, they're going to be interacting with him in a way that's not appropriate. That's why Rashi explains it. Others simply explain, Sura Ra means that this is a person who is picking a profession that has him involved with women. And that is, shows bad character or someone who is making poorer choices in the profession that they are going into. Kagom. Let me give you examples of this. So, Atzorfim. Now here, Atzorfim in general is a smelter, a metal smelter. As Rashi notes over here, we're talking about metal workers that make jewelry. So that has particularly to do with women. Va Sarikim. Sarikim are Sarek Bigadim. That comes to the word Sarek is to comb. Someone who combs the bigadim, makes them pretty and nice. So he works with the women's clothing. Vanikurot. Nikurot are those that carve the grooves into the grindstones. Sarikim are someone who creates marks on a piece of rock or stone, which is for the handmills, the grindstones that the women used to use. They would go to a sarik when the stone was worn down and no longer crushed or ground that which is in the mill. They used to go back and they used to carve new grooves into the mill. And again, we know from the Mishnah in Ketubot that one of the obligations of a woman towards her husband is to use a rechaim shel yad. So this was a purview or an area of the women. So if you have someone who works with handmills, then most likely they're going to be interacting with the women. Baruchalin, the perfume and incense sellers, again, which is something that appeals to the women. Vagardim are weavers. But saparim are barbers. Obviously, we're not talking about someone's cutting women's hair. But rather, a saparim here is someone who's cutting the kids' hair. And again, it's the same thing that the women are bringing the kids to the barber, and therefore the same thing as the teacher, where the interaction with the women is going to happen because of that. Vakobsim, the launderers. Again, the women are taking care of the laundry, so the ones who get involved with the launderers. Vagara, and a bloodletter. Vahabalan, and the one who runs the bathhouse, the one who heats up the water in the bathhouse. Vaburski, and the tanner, the one who works with the skins, again, for the women's clothing or shoes that they're going to buy the raw materials from him. So all these individuals have heavy interaction with women. And here are examples of professions where one should not be engaged with them because of the high interaction with women or the necessity of women to deal with this individual, which could lead to something amiss. So now it says, Ein mamidim em lo melech velo kohen gadol. All of these professions, we would not appoint a king or a kohen gadol for them, my taima. Lo mishum de psile. It's not because these individuals are necessarily pasul. El mishum de zil umunutayu. These are lowly professions. Since they are lowly professions, we wouldn't elevate someone from such a lowly profession to a position of authority or power. Again, in a hierarchical society, these things mean a lot. That we don't have somebody who comes from the bottom of the chain all the way to the top of the chain, that would be inappropriate. You should know that the Rambam does not list all of these professions in that grouping, meaning that he is more selective as to which of these professions are considered to be problematic, versus some of these professions don't seem to be an issue, but the way the Gemara is laying it out is the nature of the profession is lowly because of the necessity to interact with the women, which means that only people who have no other choice end up in these professions, or in the case of Burski, where it's a malodorous profession, then only people have to end up in that profession, and therefore these are considered to be lowly professions. So I would agree that culturally this would be impacted by what are considered to be demeaning professions versus good professions. I also think that you're right about the jewelry. Over here we're talking about a smelter, it's a very malodorous, again, profession, and dirty profession, that one gets very dirty in doing that. So here it ends up in jewelry. But if you're just a jeweler, or just dealing in certain, you know, areas where it's considered to be a high class profession, that maybe that would be different in the modern day. Tanrabanan, Asara Devarim Nemru Begara. There are 10 things said about a bloodletter. Malei Chalcido, he walks on his side, the way that you can see in the Masorah Shazi brings down, that is, Holech Bekomaz Kufa. He walks around in a haughty manner. Verucho Gasa, he himself is not humble. Vinitnavi Yoshev, and he only sits down when he's resting on something, meaning that he doesn't just sit down regularly and hold himself up. He has to be leaning on a couch, he has to be sitting down. As Rashi notes, these are all three types of expressions of haughtiness. He says each one is slightly different than the other, but he has all three of them, and all of these are problematic. Obviously, someone who's haughty doesn't have room for a Kodesh Baruch Hu in their life. Ve'eino tzara, and he's also a miserly individual, because he eats by his customers. Part of the bloodletting process was they used to have a big meal afterwards, and so he used to eat all the time by other people because he bloodlet, and they'd have a big meal that they would serve him, and he'd be a participant in that meal. So he doesn't want to spend any of his money on eating because he always gets free meals. So that's why he's a miser. Veinu ra'a, he wants people to get sick because then they need his services. So therefore he has a negative view towards other people. Ochel arbe, he eats tons of food because obviously if everybody else is providing the food, then he's eating a lot. Motzi kima, then he lets out, meaning that he doesn't have very much to expel because he's eating such good food and refined food. V'chashud al arayot, we have problems with him in terms of arayot because of the fact that he's also servicing women in this profession. V'alagazel, we worry about thievery because, look what Rashi says, shanashim gozlot mi baleem v'notnolo, that women steal from their husbands in order to pay for this service. They want this bloodletting service, and therefore they're going to steal money from their husbands in order to pay for the bloodletting services. And also, literally, with the killing, because if he lets too much blood, there's a possibility that he'd kill. This connects back to the Tov Shibarofim as well, which is that when you're dealing with issues of life and death, then people who are not humble and don't have humility, they can make big mistakes, or the risks are very high, and therefore there's a likelihood that they could kill someone, and the question of whether they take responsibility and whether they are careful about these issues. Darish Bar Kapara Leolam Yelamed Adam Et Bino Umanut Nikia Vikala. So now Bar Kapara says you should teach your son a clean and easy profession. So now here that they're quoting it from Bar Kapara is interesting again because of the fact that in the Mishnah it already mentions it, as well as the fact of now we're going to have a Moraim opine on this. So Mahi, what is that profession? I'm Rav Yehuda, Machto de Talmiyuta. Seems to be, Rashi says, it's a certain type of stitch. I don't know if it's a very fancy or particular type of stitch, which is someone who's not necessarily a weaver, or someone that's dealing with women all the time, because we said before that if you're involved in clothing and those types of issues, you're going to be with women. So obviously that's not what it's speaking about, but it seems to be that it was a unique professional skill that gave you the ability to charge for it, or charge a lot for it, but you didn't have to do a lot, or you didn't have to engage a lot. So that's why it's an umanut de kiavakala, or the same thing today, which is that you should pick a profession where there's high demand for the services that you're doing, but it's not something that requires a high demand of time, but rather because of the unique qualities or unique skill that you have that people demand that which you have. Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Enlecha umanut shoveret min olam. There is no profession that disappears from the world. Ashrei mishuret horav v'imunot mi'uleh. Blessed or lucky is the one who sees his parents involved in a good profession. Olo l'mishuret horav v'imunot p'kuma. And woe is to the person who has to see his parents engaged in a lowly profession. So now, what's interesting here, why do we involve horav? Rashi says, it's like three generations. Shouldn't see your parents, yourself, or your children, and it's involved in that whole shoshelet. The reason might be is because most people enter into the profession of their parents. Or, the Gemara says in other places, that one should take up the profession of their parents. They should, in some sense, continue the quote-unquote mesorah of the profession of their parents. So here it's saying that if a person has parents who have a profession that is not so good, then that pidgam, or that idea, does not apply here. And a person should try to change their profession and leave the profession of their forefathers because of the fact that it's not a desirable profession. They should change over to a more desirable profession. Also, from the other perspective, the choice of profession should also be considered, not just yourself, but how it's going to reflect on your family as well. If shadi olam below basam, that the world can't live without a perfume seller or maker, ublo bruski, and without a tanner, without someone that works the hides. Ashrei mishu umanato basam, voy lo lemish umanato bruski. So again, both of these deal with odors. One is malodorous. One has fine smells involved with it. The world needs both professions. So lucky is the one whose profession is the one that deals with the nicer smells, and the one who has the profession that deals with the malodorous smells. I think here basam is different than a rochel. A basam is the one who makes the perfumes. The rochel is the one who sells the perfumes. So the one who sells the perfumes is the one who's going to interact with the women. The producer of the perfumes, he sells it to the retailers that are going to sell it. So he's not involved with the women necessarily. So I think that would, how you would differentiate here. Now, the world needs both males and females. Lucky is the one who has male children versus woe is the one who has children that are nekevot. Again, this is obviously very societal, and this is very much a culturally influenced. The Gemara says in other places, I'm not going to comment so much about it, because obviously there is a certain amount of bias in the statements here between Zecharim and Nekevot, and we know that's the problem that arises from emphasis only on Banim Zecharim, because China is facing that problem today. I think the two main issues in their society that came up were, number one was that Zecharim were able to help out with the parnasa of the household, so that was beneficial, whereas the girls were a burden, and number two is the dowry. For the girls, you had to provide a dowry, but the Zecharim, you did not have to provide a dowry. Right? So those two issues made it that the Zechar was more wanted or desirable than the Nekeva. And again, it's still true today. If you go to societies like India and places like China, that's still true till today of that favoring the male over the female. All right, now, Rabbi Meir Omer, Lolam yelamed adam livno umanut nikiya bekala, v'yivakesh rachamim l'misha osher v'nechasim shelo. Again, here is the same quote from the Mishnah of Rabbi Meir Shita, that it's not the profession that makes the man, but rather it's the zchut or the mazal of the individual. God says, all wealth belongs to me. So in the end, I distribute it to whomever I want, and it has nothing to do with which profession you pick, but rather the zchuyot and the mazal that you have. Shimon Elazar Omer, Im Ra'ita Miyamecha, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Miyamai Lo Ra'iti Tzvi Kayetz. I never saw a deer that was a kayetz. A kayetz was a job in their day, which was drying out the fruits in the field. Remember, in their day, there's no refrigeration, so the only way to store things was to either pickle them, salt them, or dry them out. So all the fruits or vegetables that were going to be kept had to be dried out in the fields. She says, do you ever see a tzvi, a deer that was involved in this profession? Varis abal, did you ever see a lion that was a porter? V'shu'al chenvani, or do you ever see a fox that was a storekeeper? Over here, there are those that want to connect between the animals and the profession, the ari being the strong animal, so he's the porter, the shu'al, the fox being the sly one, and we just said before that the chenvani involves listiyut, and then the tzvi, kayitz, is because when you have to go spread out all the fruits all over the fields, you have to be running back and forth and all over the place, you have to be quick. So that's why these three animals are connected with these three professions. Ve'imit parnasim, shalom b'tzar. And the animals get parnosa without any problems, and even though they don't have a profession, and they were only created to service me. And I was created to serve my master. Those individuals who are only there to service me get parnosa from a Kadosh Baruch Hu without any effort or without any difficulty. I was created to service God directly. Certainly I should be able to get my parnosa without difficulty. Ella shehari oti et ma'asai. You can see there's a slight difference here in the brighter than the Mishnah. The Mishnah said shehirati, that I was bad, but over here it says shehari oti et ma'asai. My actions or my behavior caused the problem. V'kipachti et parnasati, and that's what withheld or cut out my parnosa. Shenam har, it's a quote the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, avotechem hitu, that the sins are what caused things to go astray, things to go off the derech. As we mentioned before, that this is very much related to the perikantilium of barchi nafshi, the relationship between Hashem and nature and Hashem and the animals, that the animals sing shirat Hashem, Hashem provides for them. And in a certain sense, that's the ideal that we should live up to as well, is that we have that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And we spoke about the difference between the parnosa aspect of it, the sustenance aspect of it, versus the productive side of a profession. This is only addressing that side of the sustenance side. The productive and the creative side of the profession is what differentiates man from the animal. And that obviously is where you need a profession. You need a parnosa in that sense. Not for the sustenance aspect, but for the ability to make a difference in the world. Rabbi Nurai Omer, and this is what I said to you before, that the Gemara here quotes a Braita that is identical to the Mishnah, which makes it seem like the Braita was added on to the Mishnah, not a part of the original Mishnah. Rabbi Nurai Omer, Meniach Ani Kol Umenot Shebalam. Tani Rabbi Nurai Omer, Meniach Ani Kol Umenot Shebalam, Meni Melamed Et Bini Ela Torah. I would give up all other professions and only teach my child the profession of Torah. Shkol Umenot Shebalam, Meni Omedet, Lo Ela Bimei Yalduto. Other professions are only good when you are young and you can partake and participate in the profession. Of a basic nuto, once you become advanced in age, harumutal berav, when there's no pension and when there's no social structure and safety net, social security, then the individual is left to starve. They have no ability to make a parnosa once they reach an age where they can't engage in that activity. Aval Torah einakein, Torah is not like that. Omeret lo adam beit yalduto. It helps the person out when they are young. It gives the person a sustenance and hope when they become older. What does it say when he's young? Those that are hoping or stay with Hashem will give given strength. And they will then have wings like the eagles. They will grow, meaning that they will give in the capabilities and the strengths that they need in order to engage in these activities. The Marsha goes through the entire Pasuk and explains how these Pasukim relate specifically to the professions that are mentioned here and how Torah is better than the other professions. What does it say when he becomes of a advanced age? Even when you reach the time of Seva, of advanced age, they will be flourish and fresh in you. And the way Rashi says over here, it's Mu'utzemach, that there will be fruits that are born by the investment in Torah when you're younger. And there will be a particular reward that is given to them as they become of age. That they will flourish and be fresh even at a more advanced age. Obviously, there are two aspects to this. One is that in terms of one's engaging in a profession that involves the mind rather than the physical body, then the person has the ability to continue to do that beyond the capacities of the physical body. Even when they age and they become weaker, they're still able to engage in Torah. The second thing is that the kavod that is given to those that knew Torah and are engaged in Torah is given even when they reach a more advanced age. And here, Rabbi Noah Rice seems to indicate that there's even a physical reward to this, which is that the person will get parnosa from this. And again, we saw the Marsha's statement about Rabbi Norai, that he doesn't disagree that one needs a profession and one has to make a parnosa besides Torah, especially since the Gemara in other places says that Rabbi Norai is Rabbi Meir, and therefore you have to reconcile between the Rabbi Meir of the Mishnah and the Rabbi Norai of the Mishnah. His only statement here is that in terms of training the children, that the investment should be made in training the children in Torah, and only as a secondary or a tertiary item to teach them a profession. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't have a profession, that Rabbi Norai is not arguing on the flow of the Mishnah. Or you can argue that he is similar to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which the Gemara in Brachot tells us that for the Yechidei Skula, that it's important that they be trained in Torah. But this is not advice to the world in general or to the general population. It's for those that have that capability and ability to do such a thing. But we wouldn't advise this. We wouldn't make institutionalized this type of thought that Rabbi Norai is suggesting over here. With that, we complete Masechet Kiddushin and Seder Nashim. Hadron alach, asar yuchsin, mislik alach, Masechet Kiddushin, and the Seder Nashim.